holding elections, circulation of elites, curbing corruption, separation of state powers, as well as the rule of law, are some of the issues nowadays people demand from any given political system. These are, of course, minimal requirements whose fulfillment can certainly ensure the very prosperity of any given nation. In so doing, and for years, the Iranian people, as a proud nation of an ancient civilization and rich culture, struggled to achieve just that until early 1979, when they finally managed to put an end to the 25 centuries of monarchic rule in Iran and succeeded to institute a novel manner of governance instead. What was chosen by this people was a constitution which enshrined a democracy predicated on religion.
Hi there, and welcome to yet another edition of Iran Today here on Press TV with me, Zubin Zarvan. In this episode, we'll be discussing the structure and regime of governance in the Islamic Republic of Iran. Stay with us.
One of the main mottos as pursued by the Iranian people and through all the revolutionary demonstrations was independence, liberty, and Islamic Republic, being the very things the country lacked prior to the revolution of 1979. The Shah's regime, both politically and economically, was fully dependent on the West. Political strangulation and the stifling of dissent by the state security apparatus had taken its toll on political activism. And despite having a bicameral legislative system, the Shah enjoyed carte blanche in all matters conceivable. Not to mention that Islamic jurisprudence had no part in the enactment of law or taking and making executive decisions.
When the Islamic Revolution in Iran became victorious some 37 years ago, back in 1979, the people who had a major part in its triumph, that is, the Muslim Iranian revolutionaries, were asked and tasked with a supreme job: to design the very structure and regime of governance to replace the monarchy, a system so unique that it had not been seen or heard of anywhere before. Yet because the system were to be based in religion and had to be competent enough as well as progressive enough to enable the government based on the system to react rapidly before any and all international event.
The system of the Islamic Republic in Iran is a presidential democracy, wherein three separate powers of the executive, the legislature, and the judiciary function independently. The leader, who based on the constitution is vested with the duty to enjoy supreme supervision over all aspects of the state structure and to make sure Islamic principles and the people's expedience is duly observed. As such, the leader enjoys no executive duty but is in charge of the determination and delineation of all grand strategies. The position of leadership in Iran carries certain duties and responsibilities. He is charged with appointing the head of the judiciary, the commanders of the armed forces, as well as the head of the state radio and television organization. Moreover, he comes to select six jurisprudent members of the Constitution's Guardian Council. The leader is also required to formulate the country's strategic and principal policies. But how does the leader himself get elected? Well, that is up to the Council of Leadership Experts that comprises some 88 Islamic jurisprudential experts, who are themselves elected by public vote every 8 years. This assembly is required to hold sessions whenever needed, and to embark on choosing a new leader based on circumstances as already delineated in the Constitution. Hossein Kanani Muqaddam tells us more about this.
با توجه به اصول قانون اساسی تکالیفی که بر عهده مجلس خبرگان رهبری هستش
According to the Iranian constitution, the assembly of experts is chiefly in charge of electing a replacement for the leader in case anything happens to him that prevents him from leading the nation. An example of this happened after Imam Khomeini's demise. The assembly convenes as soon as possible in the case of the leader's death to elect a new leader for the nation.
The leader must enjoy sufficient knowledge and wisdom, must be just and fair, must be brave, courageous and a good manager, and be familiar with the current circumstances in and outside of the country. He must also be able to perform leadership tasks properly. The main qualities of the leader are knowledgeability and justice based on religious and Islamic resources.
Irrespective of all these, the country is run by the administration. This also means the Iranian president is the country's second in command, and by employing the 18 ministries his cabinet enjoys, is charged with implementing the ratifications made by the legislature, or the Islamic Consultative Assembly. The bulk of the Iranian state structure is placed in the executive branch, which is said to employ some 4 million individuals. Needless to say, the executive branch is also responsible for allocating the parliament's past budgets and in reality holds the country's treasury.
The president has so much authority at his disposal. He is responsible for ensuring that the constitution is being observed in the country. He heads the executive branch of power in Iran, selects members of his cabinet, supervises and manages all the country's major affairs. The president also can have a say in all the country's major decision-making procedures and foreign policies. The president is the one who proposes Iranian ambassadors to foreign countries, and his signature must be under most international deals and agreements.
The Iranian Islamic Consultative Assembly, or parliament, hold 290 members who are elected every 4 years. These MPs run an institution that, while passing laws, is in charge of monitoring all the administration, that is, the government's decisions or taken measures. The administration also, when it comes to selecting each and every one of its ministers, will then need to get parliamentary approval from those very MPs, who also have the right to impeach any given minister or demand his or her removal whenever they deem fit. The parliament in Iran, technically speaking, can also find the country's head of state and president incompetent if and when two-thirds of the 290 MPs vote in favor of such a measure, which will ultimately also require the leader's acknowledgement in order for it to become mandatory. This is at a time, though, when the chief executive or the president does not have the authority to dissolve the parliament under any circumstance.
All the proposed cabinet members must win the parliament's vote of confidence. The MPs review the biographies, backgrounds, credentials and political and social achievements of the candidates before discussing their views and vote for or against them in the parliament. If a nominee wins the majority vote in the parliament, they will become a minister in the Islamic Republic. After winning the post, MPs can supervise the performance of ministers and question them if needed or issue them warnings if necessary. The ministers are responsible for the responding to any correspondence put forth by the MPs. The responses must be satisfactory for the representatives because if they are not persuaded, the minister's competence has to be put to vote.
The representatives of the Iranian people in the parliament or the Islamic Consultative Assembly can indeed, whenever they deem fit, embark on launching a probe into the activities and performance of any given state-run organization or even private institution. The results, though, of such an inquiry will then be binding and will be put to debate publicly within the parliament, against which appropriate and effective ratifications and decisions will be made.
Parliament also employs two other state bodies that assist the MPs in better and more stringently monitoring the administration's performance. They are called the Supreme Audit Court of Iran and the Constitution's Principle 90 Commission.
Representatives have this right to be briefed about all the measures and activities of the administration and ask government organs, ministries, and even the president for explanation when necessary. In case of seeing any legal misconduct by the administration in office or where there is a violation of the law by the administration or its ministries or organs or even the president, members of parliament are legally allowed to warn, question, impeach, and even dismiss the president or any of the cabinet ministers.
The designers of the Iranian Islamic Republic, in order to make sure that the system's parliamentary and executive output remains Islamic, and in a bid to guarantee that the constitution would at all times be upheld, went on to create a body called the Constitution's Guardian Council, or simply said, the Guardian Council. This 12-member council is in fact a legislative screen that ensures filtering all ratifications with the sole aim of establishing their compatibility with both the spirit and letter of the Constitution, as well as their consistency with Islamic jurisprudential precepts. Per this design, should that be questioned, the council will then have the right to reject a parliamentary ratification. Six of the council's jurisprudent members are appointed by the leader, and the six remaining legal, though not clerical, experts are to be chosen by the parliament itself.
Any motion to be considered by the parliament and passed as a new law is either introduced by the administration, which is called a bill, or is proposed by a group of MPs, that is called a proposal. Bills are well deliberated over by the government cabinet and are introduced to the parliament for deliberation and vote. Proposals, on the other hand, are set forth by a group of representatives and have been well thought of and carefully edited before presentation to the parliament for vote. In the Iranian parliament, all normal bills and proposals are read and deliberated over by different parliament committees.
Other than supervising the process of passing laws by the parliament, the Guardian Council is also required to screen and approve the qualifications of the candidates whenever there is a presidential election, a parliamentary election, or an experts' assembly election. The Guardian Council is also vested with the duty to ensure the due performance of all electoral constituencies and regional balloting authorities.
In order to assess the qualifications of candidates in major elections, including presidential or parliamentary, the Guardian Council can seek intelligence from certain references, whether official or unofficial. The law has clearly specified that the Council shall ask for records of the candidates from the Intelligence Ministry, the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps, the judiciary, or other places from where it can retrieve information about the background of the candidates.
Many a time it happens that the Iranian parliament passes a law, which later on is found by the Iranian Constitution's Guardian Council as being incompatible either with the Constitution or Islamic Sharia law. So what happens if we have such a divergence of opinion and a failure in agreeing on something between the Iranian parliament and the Guardian Council? Well, the Iranian Constitution has a solution. It's called the Expediency Council. It's a strategic state body, one of whose duties and responsibilities is indeed to determine the country's expediency when it comes to a difference of opinion between the Iranian Parliament or Islamic Consultative Assembly and the Iranian Guardian Council.
According to the Constitution, to make major decisions for the nation and instructing major policies, the leader consults with the Expediency Council. The body considers the highlights of any major policy or measure to be adopted by the leader in its sessions. The Council's members comprise of elites from across the country that have been chosen to deliberate over the country's major policies and decisions. Considering the result of the Council's scientific and empirical observations, the leader then makes his decision about different matters.
The leader of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, in addition to his other duties, is also responsible for the designing, determining, and planning of the entirety of the country's strategic goals. These plans, such as the 20-year development outlook, envisage a long-term prospect of the country's position many years from now. This notwithstanding, and to plan and ensure that, the leader himself employs another strategic state body called the Expediency Council. The individual members of this very council are selected by the leader himself, although great many independent researchers and experts may also collaborate with the same body elsewhere.
Inside the council are experts, elites, and persons who have held various executive or policy-making posts in the establishment for years.
In reality, the Constitution has given adequate liberty to the various executive, legislative, and judicial bodies in performing their very own assigned duties. Yet, at the helm of the system, being the leader, he still enjoys the responsibility to oversee the performance of all three branches of power, and when need be, come forth with comment, criticism, or recommendation. This non-existing contradiction is one reason why some people looking on the Iranian system from the outside have expressed a bit of confusion as to how the Iranian leader, being part of the governance system himself, gets to critique the actions of the same system of government.
The leader can exercise his supervision over different organs in two ways: encouraging right moves and criticizing wrong ones. The leader, wherever he sees that the organ's measures is not in line with the establishment's policies or not acting as fast as it must, shall offer the necessary guidelines and warnings to the organs before directly stepping into the matter. The leadership supervises the main frameworks and criticizes the trends where he sees they are not in the right path. In case any organ refrains from correcting its behavior, the leader is legally bound to step in and correct what is wrong.
As an example, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, being the leader on June 5, 2016, and in a speech for the newly elected members of the Iranian parliament, complained about the country's state of employment or lack of it. In this speech, he once again stressed the concept of resistive economy as an effective means for resolving some of the country's economic challenges, and even went on to say that seeing an unemployed Iranian youngster makes him severely disheartened.
طبق قانون اساسی که قرارداد اجتماعی بین مردم و نظام سیاسی هست.
According to the constitution, that is a social agreement between the nation and the political system, where the leader issues a criticism on something, it does not undermine democracy. I believe that in comparison, the US president's authorities are greater than those of the Iranian leader, based on the constitution. The US president can interfere in the country's affairs more than the Iranian leader can. Therefore, what matters in democracy is that things must happen based on the law and according to certain parameters and frameworks.
Perhaps a suitable example to demonstrate just how free the Iranian three branches of state power really are is the case of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or the JCPOA. All through the duration of the talks, which lasted over a decade, the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran invariably enjoyed a single and steadfast position. With the coming to power of President Hassan Rouhani 3 years ago, however, the direction of these talks did palpably so take a very different course, which was all the way sanctioned by the leader again. In Iran, to elect a new president, to choose members of a new parliament, to pick members to the leaders' experts assembly, or to choose members of any city or rural council across the country, independent and individual elections are held. All these elections are organized and held by the executive branch or the administration. During the course of the revolution's 37 years of establishment, the Iranians have taken part in some 11 presidential elections, 10 parliamentary elections, 5 elections to pick the members of the leaders' experts assembly, and they have participated in some 4 rounds of city and rural council elections. It goes without saying that this manner of public participation in Iran is testimony enough to the degree to which the Iranian system of Islamic Republic values the role of people and the legitimacy it so offers. As such, it is believed the best way to prevent the adverse effects of potential ossification of power within the various ranks of the state structure is to ensure the due circulation of elites.
هر فردی در جمهوری اسلامی به حسب توانایی خودش میتواند این امید رو داشته باشه که
Every person in the Islamic Republic, given their capabilities, can expect to be hired for his abilities at the right time. If the circulation of elites is absent in a country, the whole establishment will suffer from aging, sluggishness, and deviations, and will gradually lose its dynamism. But religious democracy ensures recycling of forces and bringing dynamism to the whole system of management.
A well-performing political system of governance cannot survive unless there is an equally well-performing and indeed independent judicial arm backing it. And this cannot possibly happen unless that very political system ensures the independence, the workability and durability of that judiciary and its legal practitioners, among whom are the judges.
In Iran's judiciary system, no one in the administration or the parliament can interfere in the judiciary structure of the country, whether it be courts, the Justice Department, courts of appeal, or even the Supreme Court, or instructions of the judiciary head. The judiciary works independent of all other government organs. It is a fact that the judiciary's budget is passed by the administration, and it is the administration that offers the budget to the judiciary. But whether it comes to court orders, no one, even the Court of Appeal, the Supreme Judge, even the provincial judiciary heads, can dictate a ruling on a judge under any circumstances.
In Iran, as previously mentioned, the head of the judicial branch is also appointed by the leader. In so doing, the likelihood of a possible interference from another branch with the judiciary and the decrees of any of its courts or tribunals is thus either removed or minimized. Apart from the surety, the judges are also accorded the necessary liberty to properly investigate individual legal cases without any duress and arrive at fair verdicts to make sure justice is duly and effectively served. As such, even the head of the judiciary, too, cannot influence any legal proceeding or impinge on its outcome if the involved judge does not wish so.
There is a price to be paid for everything in life, including the upholding of justice and the negating of any form of Western dominance. What happens is that very form of Western dominance that we're talking about then tries to distort your reality and depict it as something which it isn't. And this is exactly what's been happening with Iran ever since the Iranian Islamic Revolution culminated in victory some 37 years ago. In so doing, the Western disinformation campaign, let's call it propaganda machinery, then seeks to tarnish the image of a progressive religious democracy in Iran, and at the same time, seek to soften, if not improve, the image of some of their regional allies who happen to have some pretty undemocratic, dictatorial, and backward regimes. If you ever wanted to touch base with us and tell us what you think about what we've done or what you think need be done in this program, well, these are the ways you can actually do that. But that's all for this week's edition of Iran Today here on Press TV with me, Zubin Zarvan. Thanks a lot for watching us. Until we meet again on another episode of Iran Today, where we'll be discussing further aspects and prospects of the politics and economics of Iran, it's goodbye.